Hi, and welcome to A Hero's Journey, a literary podcast. I'm your host and judge, Jack, and I'm here with Baez's Bitches.
This is Alex.
And I'm Zach.
It's all of us. We're all Baez's Bitches. Each week, we look at a different book through Joseph Campbell's monomyth.
This week on A Hero's Journey, we're discussing The Heroes by Joe Abercrombie, a very aptly named book. This book follows several different characters, from both the Union and the North during a three-day battle outside, or during a three-day battle for a hill with a stone structure known as the Heroes on top of it. For the most part, we follow Brimmer Dangorst, the duelist that Giselle beat to win the contest in the First Law trilogy. He is struggling to regain his honor and working as a royal observer for the king after losing his position as first knight of the body, essentially a bodyguard for the king. We also follow Finry on the side of the Union, who is the daughter of High Marshal Croy and the wife of a disgraced lord, the Brocks, who had attempted to take over the kingdom again in the First Law trilogy. Finally, we follow Corporal Tunney on the side of the Union as he attempts to stay out of the battle as much as possible. On the side of the North, we follow Beck, who is the son of Shama Heartless, a famous warrior that Logan Ninefingers defeated. We also follow Craw, who is an old warrior who stood with Bethode and has a reputation for being honorable among the Northmen. And lastly, we follow Calder, the son of the old king Bethode, as he is trying to regain his birthright, as he thinks of it, as king of the North. The whole battle turns out to be fruitless, as no side gains any territory in the end, and a peace deal is negotiated by Baez, with, of course, himself being the main benefactor and everyone else being the loser of the battle.
We begin our journey where all journeys in the world of the First Law begin, when Baez decides it's time for you to do something.
That is quite right. So today for our journey, I want to talk about Brimmer Dangorst. I think he has the closest thing I could consider to a complete journey, and especially when I started the book, he has a very clear goal to regain his honor slash reputation through combat. And that's what the journey for him is. And a call to this journey does happen when Baez arrives and tells every soldier, including Gorst, that a quick resolution to the war is what's desired by the king and is what, in fact, will happen just as soon as Baez can arrange it. For a refusal of the call, Gorst notes several times throughout the book that he wants to just return to the king. And especially in the beginning, he wants to return to the king now. He doesn't want to sit here. He doesn't want to go through this fight. He's tired of being away from the king, away from the capital. And that's his refusal, just not wanting to participate in this battle, but in fact, return to the king. For a mentor, I think the best person we can look to is High Marshal Croy. He's the commander of all of the Union forces, and he gives Gorst the opportunity to prove himself, sending him different places and allowing him to participate in the fight when a lot of the soldiers and generals don't want him to. For crossing the threshold, this is being ordered by High Marshal Croy to go to the bog to deliver messages. Just setting up the battle, there's danger as the Northmen are close now, and he's crossing the threshold. And in this case, it's too soon. The battle's too soon for him to be able to leave it without participating. And finally, for Belly of the Whale, This is the first battle that Gorst engages in. He is a first to cross the shallows and to fight the Northmen across the river. He essentially saves General Jaglehorn, however you say that guy's name, one of the drinking buddies of the king, saves his regiment by becoming a rallying point and a steadfast soldier against the crushing waves of the Northmen coming across.
Your call to adventure, I think, overall, I think the journey is sparse, but I don't envy your position having to choose one in this book because it was quite quick from a timeline perspective inside the book, and we have our multiple POVs, but I think Gorst is trying to restore that honor and reputation, so I think that's fine. The call to adventure, on the other hand, is extremely book broad. I don't think it's very specific to Gorst, and I don't think it is something that he wants to be on. You know, oftentimes we do have adventurers that sit on adventures that they don't want to do, but I feel like he's in this position because of what happened in book four, when Shivers booted him down the staircase in that one, we'll say, party tavern, and then the king was in danger. So I don't think that this sort of, okay, we're going to war, is any specific thing to Gorst in particular. Well, I think it's...
Let me say, I do think it's specific to Gorst, because Baez comes and says, all right, we're going to end the war. We're going to end the war now. So Gorst is now on a timeline. The war is going to end quickly if he's going to try and regain his reputation and honor through combat. He only has a short period of time in which to do it before he's sent back, still disgraced, sent back to the capital. And now potentially there are no other wars. I mean, there's always wars in the Union, but he doesn't know that right now. So I think it is specific to Gorst, even though it is, you're right, a call for the whole army and the whole book to participate in a battle.
It doesn't happen here, but the other moment we could discuss as a call, just because this, as an off, something that took place off screen or on screen in a different book, is his demotion itself.
Oh, I see what you mean. The timeline set on the war, I guess, does put pressure on Gorst, but I don't know if that's him imposing the timeline on the adventure as opposed to Baez imposing the timeline on him. I know that's a weird distinction, but it's like Baez doesn't care about him. It's not like Baez has shown him and says, Gorst, you have 3 days, not two, but 3 days to regain your honor. He's saying, this is what I want. And he's telling everybody at once. He's not being Gorts. He doesn't even know who Gorts is at this point anymore.
That's definitely
Baez,
wrong.
Baez knows who everyone is.
And I do think you need to look at this from Gorts' perspective. When Baez is telling everybody, what Gorts is hearing is 3 days. You got 3 days to get your honor back.
Yeah, I buy that as the call to adventure we have in the book. It's probably not the original call for this. I still like losing his honor, but that's not in this book. He's already lost it.
Okay. I think your refusal of the call is very light, because if he is so focused on regaining his honor, he knows he can't return to the kin now. He has to do this thing. And I don't think there's any point where he even gets on a horse ready to leave. It's just, I don't remember him even saying it. I think you're probably right that in the back of his mind, he probably wishes he was back in the capital and having not lost his honor. But the fact that he's here now, doesn't seem like he ever tries to turn back.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with Zach.
Yeah, but I really can't, I wish I could come up with a quote or a point, something that I could, say here, but I unfortunately can't.
For the mentor, High Marshal Croy is in charge of the escapades, right? But I think it's important to note that Gorst is there as a quote-unquote royal observer, right? He's sort of outside the boundaries of the normal military system that is set up here for this conflict. He's just kind of supposed to be an eye on the going arounds and then reporting back to the king.
Yeah, but that, I don't think that takes away from I don't think that takes away from Marshal Croy giving him the opportunity to prove himself through battle.
Does and or kill sense? Himself.
Yeah.
I think the opportunities are there and that, but I don't think he's doing it for the purpose of Gorst's redemption. He's doing it for the purpose of the fact that Gorst is a one-man army who pseudo went toe-to-toe with Flesh Eaters in book three, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because Gorst was ultimately our rescue from without, wasn't he?
I don't remember, but I do remember that he saved the king back in book three.
I honestly don't know how you have such a good memory for that, but I think he was.
So all I'm saying is that he's Croy isn't doing this for Gorst. He's doing this for Croy. It just happens to align with Gorst's goals.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Alex. Normally I'd be inclined to give you this one just because I like having a mentor, but this book is just so scattered. And Gorst's goals don't really align with any amount of mentorship. This guy, as Zach says, isn't Croy pulling him aside to have a heart-to-heart about how to reclaim your honor, you need to honor yourself or something. Croy's goal is, hey, can you go fuck off and die, but take a lot of them with you and win in this battle for me? That's what you're most useful for.
That would be ideal for me. The crossing the threshold, I actually don't have a big problem with this, mainly because the bog is like a sort of delineator in the before the battle to the actual battle.
What's that?
But barbarians. For the belly of the whale, though, feel like if we take a look at our steps, like I like this first battle as a focal point for like the rising action of the story. And there is danger, but I don't think he's undergoing much of a change. And no, like he's been a soldier majority of his life. He was a duelist and now he's been a soldier for the past, I don't know how many years it's been since then. 10, who knows? You guys probably do. Since he
Wiki
first
says eight.
Okay. So I don't think this is a, you know, an unusual situation. He's found himself in plenty of battles. I just think it's being used as the rising action portion of the book. Not as anything especially different for Gorst.
I think that this is different. It's a big pitched battle, and we hear several times throughout the book that there hasn't really been a pitched battle for quite some time. They've been mostly maneuvering and walking around, trying to stay out of each other's ways, but still maneuver for territory, a couple skirmishes. So I can see this being different as a big pitched battle, and Gorst is not going to be the duelist now. He's going to be the champion, but you know, the champion involved in
the
shield.
He's not
going to
be the duelist,
the
but
fight.
He will be dueling a lot of people.
But in the midst of a larger battle. So I think it's harder for him to actually like do what he's best at, because he has to look out guard against other people.
I'm trying to remember all the way back to the original first law. Isn't Gorst's whole thing that he revolutionized dueling by like actually fighting like a real fighter rather than fencing?
Yeah, he's just a big blocky like dude, right? everyone kind of discounts him at first because he doesn't look lithe and fast, and he's just
beating them to shit.
But he's also fast.
Yeah.
So
a man bred for the battlefield.
Yeah.
The man at home and domineering on the battlefield. A force unto himself.
It's
say fighting. The words, Alex. Except Odium, Gorst. Except Odium.
He doesn't know that yet, Jack.
Uh-huh.
Possibly.
All I know is that
this man fought in the battle of nuking of the capital city. This man is not unaccustomed to war. No, I'm rejecting it.
Damn. Okay.
We're debating all this, and I'm just like, wait, this is at least his second rodeo. That is going to close us out on our departure with a true Abercrombie departure of only 2 points. We had a call that was a little loose, and we crossed a threshold. We distinctly got lost in that bog, or charged through it. Really, we just love the bog on this podcast. Finding our way to definitely not Stonehenge, we come to our initiation.
Yes, and this is quite the initiation, if I do say so myself. For our Road of Trials, we have three big things, two battles, and then one kind of search and rescue mission. So first, the charge at the bridge. This is, again, Gorst kind of leading everybody and showing everyone his prowess in battle, that he can be a leader on the battlefield, not just a duelist, if they hadn't already known that. The next thing is his battle with Cracknut, or Wyrm, with the Father of Swords. And this is demonstrating Brock's power again as a duelist. We already know that he's a great duelist, but he's redemonstrating that to us in the crowd and using it as a reminder that he's not just some drunk nut, someone who has abandoned his duty. He can still execute his duties, and he will do that, whatever the duty is, even if it's a duty that no one else would really want. And his final trial is finding Lord Brock for Finry. And in this, he's doing something different. He's not done like search and rescue things before. He's looking for a particular person. And it's a struggle for him because this particular person is married to his temptress, which unfortunately we'll have to get to in a minute. So I think him finding Brock and not killing Brock is probably the best, the way he changes the most. He's learned
the most heroic thing anyone does in a Joe Abercrombie murder, or Joe Abercrombie novel, not murder the spouse of their
I think this is the best example of how he changes into being a little bit less of a murderous rampager. Meeting with a higher power, I want to look to Colonel Felnig and his entire group of people. In them, he sees that he's being recognized for what he's doing. He gets praise for his charge against the river and then on the bridge, and they will send word back to the capital, or they say they will send word back to the capital to the king of his exploits and how successful he has been and how deserving he is of his old position. And I think Gorst assumes that this actually happened because he gets a letter from the king. Well, actually, no, it was too early. Never mind that. coming into our temptress, my least favorite point of this, and probably the most classic point of this that we're going to find on our journey in the Joe Abercrombie book, Finry is definitely a temptress for Gorst. And ew. But he is like awkwardly thinking about her all the time. He ends up professing his love for her and getting rejected.
I am glad that you overcame your temptation to not go with the obvious temptation.
Yeah, and I think, again, going back to this finding Brock, Gorst is tempted to kill Brock, thinking that that would get him Fenrir, but ultimately he does not kill Brock. So he rejects the temptress, and I guess he does this. For the atonement with the creator, we have a letter from the king.
Welcoming a message from the king.
Yes, welcoming Gorst back into the Knights of the Body for all of his years of faithful service and everything. So this is the king stating his understanding of what Gorst is and accepting him for who he is and allowing him back to being his best bodyguard. For the apotheosis, this is Gorst meeting with Fenrir and having that discussion I talked about where he confesses his love for her and she just tears into him for how awful of a person he is. And he realizes that none of this has actually made him happy. Nothing that he's accomplished here, not even getting his position back, has made him happy. And for an ultimate boon in true Joel Abercrombie fashion, he gets what he deserves, which is to be an unhappy, lonely person going on to fight and kill for the king for ever or until someone else kills him. But he did regain his honor and reputation. That was part of what he deserved.
All right, so for your Road of Trials, I have no problem with the charging of the bridge. I think it's something he does well and something that he accomplishes. The battle with Cracknut, though, are we saying that he leads the charge to the Hill of Heroes, but he doesn't actually accomplish what he wants from that battle, right? He sets off in that fight with the guy with the big sword, Weirun or whatever his name was. Yeah, and he's not the one who kills Weirun.
Yes, he is.
No, it was like a random spear killed him while they were fighting.
Oh crap! You're right.
Get bent.
I totally forgot about that. Crap.
Yeah, they're like fighting 1v1, and then the random spear killed them. Although Weirun did invent, I think, the sandwich, that book. I seem to remember that being funny, but I haven't read the Sharp Ends, where I think he's like introduced for finding Brock. How are we saying that this is a particular trial for him? Because Brock's the person who, you know, he doesn't he's fighting for Brock's wife's affections, essentially.
Yeah, so straight up not murdering that dude. Pretty challenging.
But that's supposed to be his temptation, is to kill Brock and take his wife.
No, the temptation is for Fenrir in general. I was using that as the best example of Gorst rejecting that temptation eventually and not killing Brock. But finding Brock and understanding that he shouldn't just kill him, that won't make him look good in Fenrir's eyes, is... that's the trial.
So you're talking about after the gunpowder explosion.
Yeah.
When he's like in the rubble, right?
Yep.
I could see that being challenging. I don't know if it works out in his favor. Like, I don't see how it goes towards his goal here. I think in the world of Joe Abercrombie, finding and killing Brock might have actually been a preferable thing to reaching his goals, if nobody saw it, as bad as that is to say, but it seems very in line with what people do in this universe. I just don't think finding Brock helps him regain his honor and reputation. I think the charging the bridge, you can argue he is how he's going to get back through combat. The Battle of Cracknut is also another example of that, where he ultimately fails. I have no indication that finding Brock in the rubble and after the gunpowder explodes has anything to do with the actual journey. I agree that probably not killing him is a temptation or a challenge or whatever, but I just don't see how it relates back to the journey.
Well, if he murders Brock, he can't live with himself, therefore fails.
That's not true. He kills a whole bunch of people.
I don't know what you're talking about. Dan Goris is clearly a hero.
Just one other
title of the book.
What is
such a funny title?
Part of the reason Goris lost his position was not being able to find Giselle in the fire at the House of Pleasures or whatever. So here,
because he was drunkenly crying in a whore's lap. Or sorry, he wasn't even drunk. That's the big reveal, is he was just depressed.
You could look at the parallel of him not being able to find Giselle in the fire and then finding Brock in the aftermath of the explosion as a nice parallel, like him regaining his honor in his own mind, like Jack was saying.
Well, Jack, what do you think?
Alex made a compelling argument there for the parallels in him symbolically overcoming his original failing, but it's been a while. Alex, is that how it actually reads?
Or is this, I don't think is they this, don't spend enough time on it, I think. I think you could read it that way, but I seem to remember the incidents not taking very long.
I asked Alex, sir.
No, I don't think Gorst ever goes through his mind like, oh, this is similar to what happened with Giselle. I don't think that's part of his...
Then Alex, unfortunately, I prefer to live in your world. That is not the world Joe Abercrombie has created for us. We have a successful trial. We have a failed trial. But tragically, we do not have a third trial. Therefore, the road of trials is a failure.
I think with the meeting with the higher power, I think you're prescribing a lot of importance to the opinion of the colonel and his group, right? He does get accolades, I guess you could call them, from the other soldiers for his militaristic ability. But I'd like to hear why those accolades are like the boon that the higher power would bestow.
Well, let's see. Part of it. Okay, so one of the things we need to do for me to kind of make this point is Gorst gets a letter from the king welcoming him back to the Knights of the Body, right? That letter wasn't actually written by the king. That letter was written by Baez, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when Colonel...
Under argument, anything written by the king is
inherently
by his will.
Yeah, well, this one is kind of like, it's not explicitly stated, but very heavily hinted at that Baez wrote letters, to both Finry and Brock, and then by extension, when Gorst gets a letter from the king, you know, basically welcoming him back to the Knight of the Body for his work here, but dated 6 days before the battle actually took place, you can infer that Baez wrote this. So Colonel Felnig and everyone else are sending words of praise back to the capital. In fact, they're sending them to Baez just by virtue of saying them while Baez is in camp. I'm sure he heard everyone praising Gorst, and that is ultimately what gets him his position back.
Okay, I see what you're doing, but I think I like it better if he doesn't get a lot of attaboys, right? Gorst is someone who's been repeatedly, and then unfortunately for him, torn down, usually through machinations of where he's bested unfairly, right? Nothing that he necessarily does wrong, just circumstances happen to Gorst oftentimes, and that's led him to the place that he is. So I think these sort of attaboys from people who are militaristically beneath him is still an acceptance of his peers, that something he didn't have. So I actually like it more as a character confidence builder than as something that might have incidentally led towards Baez giving him back his title.
Okay, well then I changed my point to what you said.
I mean, does that make sense what I'm saying? But
yeah, no, I do see like building his self-confidence. I think that's very important too, because he's like oddly not a self-confident person.
Well, yeah, if you worked your whole life to build up to be like the best sword fighter and then you lost to somebody who, yes, eventually became the king, but it was cheating, then you would feel bad too.
And that voice, that I think is the real problem.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. The temptress, I think it's fine. She's a married woman, but it is extremely stereotypical. So I don't know what he would have really done besides kill her husband. I think he's very crestfallen when he finds out that the husband's been the one who's been appointed the Lord of Angland. But I think it's a fine temptation.
Yay.
The atonement with the creator. Are we saying that Baez or the king is the creator in this instance?
The king.
Well, Baez clearly is the creator of everyone, Zach. He's Aslan.
So if Baez is the one you're saying wrote the letter, then is this really an atonement with the creator? Because who knows if the king, this is even the king's idea.
I mean, the king will gladly accept this and state it as his idea for the end of time, or till the end of time. So, does it really matter? Gorst sees this as a acceptance from the king. The king is going to accept Gorst back into the Knights of the Body. Does it really matter that this happened to be from Baez without the king's knowledge, when the king is going to accept it as soon as he hears that he has accepted it?
I don't know, Jack. Does it matter where it comes from? Who originates it, if it's ultimately...
I think that in this particular case, I accepted your argument for meeting with the higher powers, Act, but I think the fact that Gorse perceives this as an atonement with his king as enough.
Okay, I'm willing to take that. And then the apotheosis, I don't think it, realizing this is, sorry, realizing that this doesn't make him happy is something that gets him his honor and reputation back. And I don't even know if he goes so far as to think that it doesn't make him happy. He's just as really upset that Finry is rejecting him. Like, I'm sure he's still happy that he's going to be the guard of the body or whatever it's called.
No, I think there is like a quote from him. Let me look for it. That,
all right,
where he's like, he's not happy, but keep going with your point.
Yeah. And I think that he's going to be leaving this behind, going back to the king, going back to the capital. And that's what he wanted all along. So I do think he achieves his ultimate boon. I just don't think there's necessarily a realization that the boon is a bad thing, but I'm willing to wait and hear if that's the case. So I've actually got no problem with the ultimate boon, although I thought what he deserves is a bit odd, but yeah, we're still
okay. So yeah, for the apotheosis, I'm gonna have to read, it's gonna be kind of a long quote, but I think this is the only way to really illustrate the point that I was trying to make. She turned with one last look of excruciating contempt and left him standing among the wounded. They no longer looked so happy for him as they had done. They looked on the whole to be in very great pain. The birdsong was half dead, crowning once more. His elation was a crashing sandcastle, washed away by the pitiless tide of reality. He felt as if he was cast from lead. Am I doomed always to feel like this? A most uncomfortable thought occurred. Did I feel like this before Sepangi? He frowned after Fenry as she vanished back into the hospital, back to a pretty young dolt of a Lord Governor. He realized far too late he should have pointed out that he'd been the one to save her husband. One never says the right things at the right time, a stupendous understatement in her, if ever there was one. He gave an epic grinding sigh. This is why I keep my fucking mouth shut. Gorst turned and trudged away into the gloomy afternoon, fists clenched, frowning up at the heroes, black teeth against the sky at the top of their solemn hill. So here, he doesn't explicitly state, like, I am not happy. But we have reference to him before losing his position with the body. He's feeling like he's cast in lead. His elation is being washed away like a sandcastle on a beach. He's clearly not happy with what's happened. And I think that is a good apotheosis, because even though he gets what he wants, he realizes, like, he has what he wants. He has his position back. It's not making him happy. And
I agree that he's not happy. We don't need to argue that. The part that I don't necessarily agree with is that, doesn't our apotheosis have to be towards the completion or the getting the ultimate boon, right? Completing the ultimate boon or achieving the ultimate boon? Doesn't this apotheosis actually directly contradict his ultimate boon?
I think it does, but I also kind of points out what he should have got that his ultimate boon was. The last thing we hear from Gorse is just finishing that paragraph I was reading is, by the fates, I need to fight someone, anyone. That is what made him the happiest. If that's what he was going for, he already had it, but he instead went after his honor and reputation. So yeah, it doesn't really point towards the ultimate boon. It in fact points away from it. But I do think it's a really good understanding. And
I do think it's a really good realization and understanding. I just don't think it relates into his achieving of the boon, but I guess that comes down to Jack. Well, I mean,
I was all ready to agree with Alex until you phrased that really well there at the end. It is certainly a revelation. I think what we have to ask ourselves here is, Alex did a really good job in setting the ultimate boon as getting what he deserves. So he regains his honor and reputation, but in true Drow Abercrombie-ness, for lack of a better word, realizes that those things aren't necessarily what made him happy. It's the blood, the murder, and as a podcast, where do we stand on the apotheosis as a revelation that ultimately your victories were pyrrhic and let the boon turns to ash in your mouth?
The closest thing I think we have to this is in Red Rising, the second one, where he, like, the jackal
wins the battle.
Yeah, I mean, like, overthrows the triumvirate or whatever, but the realization that the jackal betrayed them leads him to not achieve his ultimate boon. Whereas he is still achieving his boon here, it just doesn't mean as much to him.
We cheated on Golden Sun and sidestepped it by giving the apotheosis to the freeing of the obsidians.
Oh, did we? Okay. Yeah. Well, that was the closest thing I had as a podcast sort of. What's the word I'm looking for? Precedent.
I think I'm okay with it. I think that it is certainly a revelation. I think what it does do is ultimately makes the ultimate boon not a boon.
Okay.
I think this apotheosis is true. I think it comes out of order. I think we received the ultimate boon, and this is the revelation that the ultimate boon meant nothing, and that
therefore it's not the ultimate boon.
Yeah.
I was honestly really looking when I was doing this, like, he needs to get a letter from the king at some point welcoming him back, and he got that. I was like, perfect. Now we need a time jump of him accepting his place for the king. Yeah, that was.
And then
what
you
remember really
what you were reading.
For.
That is going to close out our initiation with a substantially higher score of 4 out of 6. We don't have a road of trials, and tragically the ultimate boon turned out not to be too ultimate and or boony. Coming right on into our return, Alex, what do you got for us?
Well, I got a ton. got a ton. For the refusal of the return, Gorst, you know, has this moment of thinking, well, I want to fight again. I need to fight, and there's no one left to fight. So I guess he'll move on. For a magical flight, we have a time skip. And he the returns.
Thing you just said he didn't get.
To returns to the kingdom. Yep. The rescue from without. I like to imagine that there is an attack on Gorst's ship as he is sailing back to the Union, and someone else comes and saves him.
Are they ships?
Sure. We don't know what
ships are. They ships? To. I thought they walked.
The north is separated from the Union by water. I thought. Yeah.
I thought it was there was a river. I thought there was.
No, you can be in. I thought you could be in Angle. Right, it's like Angle in the north, and then the heart of the Union.
But anyway, I like to imagine that Gorst sailed and was saved by, the poisoner. No, he died, didn't he? Let's say he gets saved by Shivers somehow.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I'm looking at the map now. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. For the crossing the return threshold, I imagine Gorst returning home. Are you really going to let me keep doing this?
Yeah.
None of this happens in the book.
Yeah, no, keep going.
All right. For Master of Two Worlds, Gorst is a celebrated champion fighter and also esteemed bodyguard, Knight of the Body. And for a freedom to live, Gorst takes his rightful, deserved place next to the king.
And no, as king.
Protects him for all of the rest of his life.
Good. Yes,
I agree with all of these points.
All these points seem accurate to me.
That is a flawless return. Everything hit.
Taking us to easily a hero.
A 12 out of 17.
In the world of the Alex fanfic, Gorst is a...
coming indeed. This fall to Literotica for you. A hero's journey, the retelling of the first law where everyone gets a happy ending.
Oh my god, Gorst does not have a return.
Wow, weird.
What?
Docked Pikachu face.
Yeah, so there is no return for this story. We come to a close pretty fast on it. So we're gonna take some time to talk about just other things that we've liked. Getting in first, and because we didn't compare notes beforehand, I want to talk about Calder's storyline because he's fun, and he's a character that I remember hating all of these guys back when I was first reading the series. And even though it was grimdark, I was still definitely rooting for Logan as a heroic figure ish, and therefore did not like any of our occupiers in the north as the bad, quote unquote, bad guys. And I loved the depth that a little bit more depth that we got for Calder here. And ultimately, maybe it's just because we all love Glockta, but I absolutely love that he gets his moment sitting across from Baez, where he finds out that fuck me, being in charge is terrible. And I love the move of going, you know, my brother's still alive. He'll be a great king. And then I don't have to deal with it. I get to just be powerful.
Yeah, and I thought that the reintroduction of old characters like Blackdaw, like Shivers, was interesting. I was surprised that Shivers had found his way to be essentially the bodyguard of Blackdaw so quickly after the events of the last book that I read. And I didn't really see him taking out the King of the North, kind of foreshadowed. Looking back, there's a little bit of it when he's saying that he just wants respect, but it seemed almost not out of character, but it seemed like of all the things that Blackdaw did to him, the self-naming or the naming outright of him as being his dog was a relatively minor thing. And so I thought it was an odd trigger, I suppose, to get Baez what he wanted. And so I felt like, you know, Baez is all powerful and his machinations are unbeknownst to us mere mortals, but it felt like maybe he set up half a dozen ways for Black Dog to get killed. And this is maybe one that surprised him, but got him what he wanted anyway. And so, it's all coming up Baez, and which is of course traditional. I thought the introduction of the Gurkish gunpowder here to the Union in the North was something that will have worldwide ramifications, which I think is fairly obvious. I would have liked to have seen a little more from Dogman. And of course, I missed the best character in the series, Nine Fingers. But overall, I thought it was an okay read. The pacing was fine. But I guess I wanted slightly more character development, which is probably naive of me in what we've come to understand from this world.
Yeah, I think the two characters who developed, well, there's one character who developed a lot and got a happy ending, and I think that's Beck. He struggled to become a warrior, to live up to his father's name, and then ultimately finds out that he doesn't want to fight, and he goes home to his farm. And I think that's the closest to a happy ending we're ever going to get from a Drew Abercrombie novel. A man went out to war, killed his friend, got PTSD, traumatized, and then went home to live on a farm. That's the happiest thing we're ever going to get from a Joe Abercrombie novel, which is sad, but also great. And the other character is Craw, where you think that he wants the same things as Beck. You think that he wants to go home, become a carpenter, live his life. And I love at the end of the book how Hardbeard, who he had fought, not really fought, but he got kicked off the heroes to start the book, eventually comes to take him back to be Calder second. And he realizes like he can't be anything but a soldier. So I like the kind of parallel of the young man who wants to be a soldier, realizes that he can't and goes home, to the old man who thinks he wants to go home, but realizes he has to be a soldier and comes back to fight. So I really enjoyed that part of the book.
Thank you so much for joining us. If you've been enjoying Hero's Journey as much as we love doing it, don't forget to leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts from. And if that place happens to be Spotify, don't forget to answer our weekly polls. They're fun. Alex loves to write them. We love to see what you say, if you ever respond. As always, I have been your host and Judge Jack.
This is Alex.
And I'm Zach.
And join us next week as we dive into the story of Lamb, definitely not Logan Ninefingers, in Red Country.
And Shy. Don't forget Shy.
Yay!
Oh, thank you.
Welcome to A Hero's Journey, our Dave the Barbarian retro podcast.
Kevin.
We calling you out, Kevin.